Good morning, everyone. Welcome on this beautiful fall day. My name is Carol Goldman, and I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of this congregation. We welcome all, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, factors that can separate people in larger culture. If this is your first time visiting us, please join us after the service for coffee and conversation. Feel free to take brochures on UUism that are on the wall near the outside door. Actually, they're on the table. Please sign our guest book out in the fireplace room. People with name tags with blue dots are members of our congregation and will be glad to chat with you about their experiences in this fellowship. Because our services do differ week to week, we encourage you to come back a few more times to get a flavor of our services and our community, especially during the next few months. Now is the time to turn off all cell phones. Parents of small children are reminded that we have child care and religious education classes. If you choose to keep your children with you, please respect our need for quiet at this time. Again, welcome. We look forward to getting to know you. And I'm going to turn over the service. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Good morning. I'm Abigail Stockman, the interim minister. And I do have a few announcements that Carol didn't get because they were, I'm sorry, they were printed in my order of service here. I will have office hours this week on Tuesday from 4 to 6:30 and Thursday from 1 to 3 p.m. And I would be happy to meet with you at other times. If you give me a call, we can arrange an appointment at our mutual convenience. There will be a Vespers service this Wednesday evening, October 5th, between 7 and 7:30 here. It will be a time of renewal and reflection midweek. We will have some readings and music and prayer, meditation, quiet time. It will be a bit eclectic, and it's really just a moment to renew in the middle of a busy week. Between 7 and 7:30 on Wednesday night, October 5th. And we'll give this a try and see if there's a good response. And now we will begin with our prelude. Thank you. We gather today at the beginning of the time of turning. The leaves have begun to turn in color. They are fading from slow but daily loss of living green chlorophyll, turning instead as they go toward their death into their very richest hues. The Jewish days of awe, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur are upon us. They are the time for turning away from the ordinary and the everyday in order to reflect upon life's deeper connections and meanings. It is a time for turning. The cycle of the year is changing. The wheel of the year is turning from the season of ripening to the season of harvest. It is a time for turning. Let us take this holy hour and turn away from the everyday, the ordinary, as we join together to discover and name what and where it is that we encounter the holy, the sacred, and the eternal. Please rise in body or in spirit for our chalice lighting, our unison affirmation, our greeting, and our hymn. Jan Weiss will do our chalice lighting this morning, and these are words of his writing.
May we find, excuse me, may we find our true path, and may our work be fulfilling and to the benefit of other beings.
We light this chalice in the spirit of connections, sisterhood, brotherhood, and love. And may the flame of this chalice remind us of the light that shines within each of us.
Love is the doctrine of this fellowship. The quest for truth is its sacrament,
and service is its prayer.
To dwell together in peace, to seek truth in love, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony. Thus do we covenant with one another.
Please greet your neighbor in the spirit of openness and wonder. Number 361, enter, rejoice, and come in.
Thank you. So if I could have all the kids come up for a story. If you could come right up front here. See if this works. How are you all today? Good? I am going to read a story called The Three Questions, and it's written and illustrated by John Muth. Have you ever heard it before? No? Okay. There once was a boy named Nikolai who sometimes felt uncertain about the right way to act. "I want to be a good person," he told his friends, "but I don't always know the best way to do that." Nikolai's friends understood, and they wanted to help him. "If only I could find the answers to my three questions," Nikolai continued, "then I would always know what to do." When is the best time to do things? Who is the most important one? What is the right thing to do? Nikolai's friends considered his first question. Then Sonia, the heron, spoke. "To know the best time to do things, one must plan in advance," she said. Gogol, the monkey, who had been rooting through some leaves to find something good to eat, said, "You will know when to do things if you watch and pay close attention." Then Pushkin, the dog, who was just dozing off, rolled over and said, "You can't pay attention to everything yourself. You need a pack to keep watch and help you decide when to do things. For example, Gogol, a coconut is about to fall on your head." Nikolai thought for a moment. Then he added, asked his second question, "Who is the most important one?" "Those who are closest to heaven," said Sonia, circling up into the sky. "Those who know how to heal the sick," said Gogol, stroking his bruised noggin. "Those who make the rules," growled Pushkin. Nikolai thought some more. Then he asked the third question. "What is the right thing to do?" "Flying," said Sonia. "Having fun all the time," laughed Gogol. "Fighting," barked Pushkin right away. Then the boy thought for a long while. He loved his friends. He knew they were all trying their best to help him answer his questions. But their answers didn't seem quite right. Then an idea came to him. "I know," he thought. "I will ask Leo the turtle. He has lived a very long time. Surely he will know the answers to what I am looking for." Nikolai hiked up into the mountains where the old turtle lived all alone. When Nikolai arrived, he found Leo digging a garden. The turtle was old, and digging was hard for him. "I have three questions, and I came to ask your help," Nikolai said. "When is the best time to do things? Who is the most important one? What is the right thing to do?" Leo listened carefully, but he only smiled. Then he went on with his digging. "You must be tired," Nikolai said at last. "Let me help you." The old turtle gave him a shovel and thanked him. And because it was easier for a young boy to dig than it was for an old turtle, Nikolai kept on digging until the rows were finished. But just as he finished, the wind blew wildly and rain burst from darkened clouds. As they moved toward the cottage for shelter, Nikolai suddenly heard a cry for help. Running down the path, he found a panda whose leg had been injured by a fallen tree. Carefully, Nikolai carried her into Leo's house and made a splint for her leg with a stick of bamboo. The storm raged on, banging at the doors and windows. The panda woke up. "Where am I?" she said. "And where is my child?" The boy ran out of the cottage and down the path. The roar of the storm was deafening. Pushing against the howling wind and drenching rain, he ran further into the forest. There he found the panda's child, cold and shivering on the ground. The little panda was wet and scared, but alive. Nikolai carried her inside and made her warm and dry. Then he laid her in her mother's arms. Leo smiled when he saw what the boy had done. The next morning, the sun was warm, birds sang, and all was well with the world. The panda's leg was healing nicely, and she thanked Nikolai for saving her and her baby from the storm. At that moment, Sonia, Gogol, and Pushkin arrived to make sure everyone was all right. Nikolai felt great peace with himself. He had wonderful friends, and he had saved the panda and her child. But he also felt disappointed. He still had not found the answers to his three questions. So he asked Leo one more time. The old turtle looked at the boy. "But your questions have been answered," he said. "They have?" asked the boy. "Yesterday, if you had not stayed to help me dig my garden, you wouldn't have heard the panda's cries for help in the storm. Therefore, the most important time was the time you spent digging in the garden. The most important one at that moment was me, and the most important thing to do was to help me with my garden. Later, when you found the injured panda, the most important time was the time you spent mending her leg and saving her child. The most important ones were the panda and her baby, and the most important thing to do was to take care of them and make them safe." Here you are back up in the tree. "Remember then that there is only one important time, and that time is now. The most important one is always the one you're with, and the most important thing is to do good for the one who is standing at your side. For these, my dear boy, are the answers to what is most important in this world. This is why we are here." So thank you so much. And to enjoy your day and everyone you're with today and all days. So if we could now sing the kids out for Sunday school.
Offering is a sacrament of the free fellowship. It is supported by the voluntary generosity of all who join with us. The offering will now be given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values. Please be generous. Thank you. Let us join together in our responsive reading, number 568, and I will ask that you respond to one another. So my left side, will you please read the words not italicized, and on this side of the room, will you please respond with the italicized words? This is the time of sharing personal joys and sorrows of our lives, deepening the connections of this community one to the other. If you have a joy or a sorrow, please come forward if you would like and light a candle, and you may, if you wish, share with the gathered community.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Beverly Bilardi. I'm lighting a candle of joy and a request for protection prayer because Sarah got her permit and she's been driving. So,
how you doing?
I must do this. I'm lighting a candle of joy for the Yankees.
I'm Susan Wade. This is a candle of joy. Handy and my son Peter decided all by himself that he wanted to go to boarding school in the middle of August. He was accepted and he is now at a boarding school in Deerfield, Massachusetts. It was a wrench to let him go, I have to say. But he loves it and he's doing very well. And sometimes, as I've told people, being a mother means that you have to do what doesn't feel best for you, but is obviously best for your son. And I think that in this case, he knew what was best for him. So I'm very happy that he's doing very well.
For the joys and sorrows, bittersweet and fully received, that have been spoken here, and for those that remain in the silent sanctuaries of our hearts, I light one final candle. Jan Weiss is going to lead us this morning in a time for deepening with his own meditation. And I forgot the hymn. Seems to be my morning. So, stand in body or in spirit, let us join in hymn number 88, Calm Soul of All Things.
We'll begin just by sitting comfortably, sitting beautifully, and you may choose to close your eyes or leave them open with a soft downward gaze, settling slowly into your breath, being one with your breath, feeling the air coming in and going out. Feeling your belly rising as the air comes in and falling as it goes out. Letting go. Letting go of tension. Relaxing your face, your eyes, your nose, your lips. Relaxing your chin, your jaw. Letting go of any tension in your neck, in your shoulders. Letting go of fears, worries, and concerns. Just being in this moment, being with your breath. Breathing in, breathing out. Now I will offer a few short phrases. I may repeat each phrase once or twice, and then I will pause, allowing you the time to enter the space created by the words that you hear. Breathing in, may I feel safe. Breathing out, may I feel safe. Breathing in, may I trust I'm enough just as I am. Breathing out, may I trust in my own goodness and beauty. Breathing in, may I trust that what I need will come. Breathing out, may I trust to receive those things that come my way. Breathing in, may I open my heart to receive all the love that comes my way. Breathing out, may I open my heart to receive all the love that comes my way. Breathing in, may I feel safe to reveal myself to myself. Breathing out, may I feel safe to reveal myself to others. May my work be fulfilling. May I find my true path. May I benefit other beings. May my heart grow strong and soft, confident and open to receive everything and all who come my way. May my heart grow strong and soft, confident and open to receive everything and all who come my way. May I be soft, gentle, and kind. May I take the time to be thoughtful, considerate, and patient. May I take the time to listen deeply. May I take the time to see deeply and to feel deeply. May I take the time to listen deeply, to see deeply, and to feel deeply. I take the time to understand deeply and to speak lovingly. May I take the time to understand deeply and to speak lovingly. Breathing in, may I be well and healthy in every way. Breathing out, may I be joyful. Breathing in, may I be well and healthy in every way. Breathing out, may I be joyful. Breathing in, may I be peaceful and at ease. Breathing out, may I be calm. May I be filled with loving kindness for myself and for others. May I be filled with loving kindness for myself and for others.
Where is worth? Before I begin this morning, I just want to say there is not enough time today, and it's not in the order of service for sharing time, but I invite anyone who wants to come right back in with their coffee for about 15 minutes of sharing time, if people feel so inclined after the service. Where is worth? There's a song from the Broadway musical based on Dickens' Oliver Twist that goes, "Where is love?" It's a rather plaintive song of yearning. Where is love? Does it fall from skies above? Is it underneath the willow tree that I've been dreaming of? Its word and its mood seems apropos of the question, where is worth? Where will we, religious liberals engaging in faith community without dogma, without doctrine, and without creed, where will we find what we yearn for? And what is it that we yearn for? Where is worth? Does it fall from skies above? Is it something that comes from some being with power over us? Each of you sitting here this morning knows your own answer to this question. Your answer may be yes, or it may be no. Your answer can be a maybe or a maybe not. Your answer may be, I don't know, and it doesn't matter. What we do share is this, an understanding that the answer to the question of whether or not there is a God, a being with some power over us, is not the primary concern of our religious lives. We agree that our time together, our religious services, are not about paying homage or obeisance to some deity or sacred object. We can and do address questions about God, about the many ways of understanding the meaning of God, God with a small g, God as feminine, God as the creative life force, God as the mysterious presence, God as the source of all, God as that enduring something which is before our lives and after our lives, God as the laws of nature or the interdependent web of all being. Occasionally, we do address the possibility for a meaningful understanding of the concept God in our liberal religious lives. We address this from the compassionate perspective of understanding, understanding that for many of us, this word is associated with irrational belief and power and is not at all a useful concept. Understanding that the concept God with power over is connected for some of us with rejection or manipulation or emotional pain and hurt. Understanding that for many Unitarian Universalists, the question of God is not nearly as important as the question of how we will live our lives. And on this, we feel worth is. And on the question about God, we do not expect to agree. For whether or not there is a God, or any of us believe or not in some deity or general theism, is not the primary concern of our religious life. We are, as a religious people, concerned with how we live our lives, and we look to many sources for guidance. Where is worth? Is it underneath the willow tree? In the nature of which the willow tree is a part? Here, Unitarian Universalists have found lots of value in understanding our connections to one another through our connections to the larger world, the world of nature. It is in nature and in the quiet solitude that many of us find our own inner peace. It was Emerson, Thoreau, Margaret Fuller, and other mid-19th century, mostly North American writers and thinkers who introduced transcendentalism into our religious thinking. Their writings connected our human intuitive knowing of a spiritual reality to our experiences in nature. Many a Unitarian Universalist relates to and understands their religious experience through their connection to the outdoors. And more recently, many of us have discovered their own sense of truth and meaning in the relationship of our lives to the enduring cycle of seasons and the intentional celebration of those earth-centered cycles. Where is worth? Like the three questions in the story this morning, as religious people, we yearn to know what has value for us and what does not. As a liberal religious people, we are concerned more with how our religious thinking and our spiritual yearning calls us to be and to act in this world, in the here and the now. When is the best time to do things? How are we called to respond to each other's needs, to death, to grieving, to loss, to conflict, to hope, to joy? Who is the most important one? What are the possibilities? What is the right thing to do? What are our choices? And what criteria do we use to discern and not just decide how we individually and as a religious community will respond to these questions? As in the story, the answers may change depending on the circumstances. To discern is to separate and pull apart a question. It is to perceive and recognize and distinguish among the many facets of the question, whereas to decide is to cut off, settle conclusively, make a decision and reach a, make a judgment and reach a decision. Ultimately, many of our questions do need decisions in order for us to function in this world. But the liberal religious question is never, what should the decision be? But rather, how do we discern the right decision for this question in this here and this now? Like the three questions in the story and their answers in that in each moment, our questions are relational. Our liberal religious questions center around three aspects of relationship: our relationship with ourselves, our relationship within. Love thy neighbor as thyself are the words that Jesus spoke. I always like that, as thyself part. We tend to kind of throw that aside sometimes. Our questions center around our relationship with each other, between and among us. Learning to love not in some romantic, nice way, but rather with the intention of increasing our capacity for compassion, kindness, and understanding, while holding firmly into our sense of self. Finally, many of us seek to connect in some way with something we sense is enduring or greater than our own self-interest. For some, this is a noun: God, goddess, eternal presence, source of life, interdependent web of all existence. For some of us, this is a verb: suffering, becoming, creative, creating, living, being. Questions about justice arise around all these relationships. What does justice and injustice feel like within ourselves, in our own lives? How do we relate to others in a justice-making way? And what does some bigger picture of the universe that perhaps no one of us can see by ourselves, what does that bigger picture have to do with our relationship to an understanding about the possibilities for justice? Where is worth? There is a Zen story about a great professor who goes to visit a Zen master. And the Zen master, Nan Yin, serves his guest tea. He poured his visitor's cup full, and then he kept on pouring. You perhaps have heard this story before. The professor watched the overflow until he could no longer restrain himself. "It's over full," he said. "No more will go in." "Like this cup," Nan Yin, the master, said, "you are full of your own opinions and speculations. How can I show you Zen unless you first empty your cup?" Often we come to service, to worship, as I call it, to empty our own cups and to be refilled with something more grounded in our own reasonable and heartfelt understanding that will, we hope, help each of us to act more in congruence with our faith as we grow to understand it. We come, perhaps, to take time out from life's busyness, to give thanks for what we have, to grieve our losses, to share our gifts and our burdens. We come seeking perhaps forgiveness for ourselves and a way to find peace in our being around those hurts and injustices we may have suffered. We come perhaps seeking another light, another's light when we are plunged in our own darkness, and we come to provide light for others when we feel centered and calm. We seek the wisdom, perhaps, that comes from listening to something beneath our own anxiety and the clamor for recognition in the competitive world around us.
Recently, a question was raised in our movement about using religious language as Unitarian Universalists. It's a great question. Can we use traditional religious language? Is it relevant for us? And why would we want to? My answer is yes. In fact, my answer is that it is vital for us as a religious movement, especially if we wish to grow and remain relevant in a changing world. First of all, Unitarian Universalism is a religion. We are a liberal religion. Liberal meaning generous, open, broad-minded, and not limited by dogma, doctrine, or creed. Liberal means that the questions are more important than the answers, that discerning is more important than deciding, that process is more important than the outcome. Each week in this congregation, you affirm this when you say the quest for truth is our sacrament. The quest, not the truth, is the sacrament. And what do we mean when we say that? The meaning of sacrament is that it confers us with some grace. In traditional Christianity, this grace is bestowed upon us by a God with a capital G, because within that doctrine we have somehow performed correctly, or one has performed correctly. But I would ask, must we reject the spiritual need for experiencing some sense of inner and innate goodness or blessing or forgiveness simply because we reject one doctrine about how that blessing or forgiveness came about? If we reject everything connected with religion because of our rejection of a particular doctrine, what then brings us to religious community? Where is worth? It is an act of true heresy in the very best sense of that word for us to use religious language, because it is the language that our culture uses and knows, and it satisfies our very real human spiritual needs. Let us reclaim these words with an open, generous, broad-minded understanding, an understanding that does not become doctrinal but is continually open and evolving, like the answers to the three questions. My colleague Mark Bellatini wrote in an Easter sermon, "I am not interested in supporting commonplace misunderstandings. Two words are central to my understanding of my work as a minister. These two words are literal and literate. With all that is in me, I preach against the literal, the foolish notion that the ancient stories are to be understood in an authoritatively shallow and surface way, or else tossed in the garbage can. But at the same time, with my whole ministry, I preach on behalf of a literate understanding of our ancient traditions, one respectful of our life experiences, our reason, our passion, and our desire to live a good and honest life." Where is worth? The word worship itself, while it has come to mean traditionally paying obeisance to a deity or a sacred object, comes from the Middle English word worthscrip, I don't know if I pronounce that correctly, meaning worth. And I say we come to worship because we come to find what is of worth for each of us. From one week to the next, where do we find what is worth? Where do we come to calm our souls, to hear the still small voice within, to collectively know what we find of value and of worth as we discern together? The
The other meaning of worship is that to which we are ardently devoted. To what are we ardently devoted? Where do we place our emotional and physical energy? How do we spend our money and our time? I come to worship because I have often filled my own inner cup with answers that arise not from any real discernment, but rather from a disguised need to protect my own self-interest. When I am in worship, there is a time and a space and music and words and community that help call me back to discerning what is truly of worth. That call me back to emptying my cup so that I can be filled with something more worthwhile. We all want to be good people. Let us each seek what is of worth. May we find it here in our being together. Blessed be. Let us join together in our closing hymn, number 53, I Walk the Unfrequented Road. And you may stand as you are able, and then please stay standing for our chalice extinguishing and closing words. Connections are made slowly. May the connections we make within, between, and beyond take us deeper into our own centeredness, be enduring, and lead us towards the wisdom of worth that we seek. May we be blessed with the opportunities to notice what is worthy of our attention and our actions, and then do the work of living into that worth.
Sing or say our chalice extinguishing words.
Catherine of Mary.